Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI.
Okay, let's unpack this one. Today, we're diving into a novel that, well, it feels essential, really. Marcus Zusak's The Book Thief. It's just stunning historical fiction. We've got a good stack of notes here looking not just at the plot, but, you know, the why of it, why Zusak made the choices he did.
It's such a powerful book, and you really have to start with Zusak himself, I think. He's Australian, but his parents were German and Austrian immigrants, and he grew up hearing their stories about World War II.
Right, the everyday reality of it.
Exactly. Tales from Munich during the war, the bombings, but also these quiet moments of just decency, ordinary people trying to hold on to who they were.
And that personal connection just infuses the whole novel. It sets the stage perfectly. Yeah. We're in Nazi Germany, 1939 to 45, mostly in this fictional town, Mulching, near Munich. It's a place just soaked in fear and propaganda. So our mission today, I guess, is to get inside this central puzzle Zusak sets up. How can words, which the Nazis are weaponizing so brutally, how can they also become tools for survival, for connection, for saving humanity almost?
That paradox is everything. And it starts with maybe the boldest choice Zusak makes, the narrator. It's death.
Yeah, death himself. But not, you know, the scary skeleton figure. This death sounds tired, almost philosophical, and surprisingly kind of compassionate.
He is. He seems constantly sort of baffled by humans, how we can be so cruel one minute and then just show these flashes of incredible kindness the next.
There's that detail about color too, isn't there? Death is always noticing colors.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He uses colors the sky, mostly as a distraction, maybe a way to cope with his job. He describes souls by their color when he collects them. It's not just window dressing. It suggests even death is looking for beauty in this bleak world.
So why do that? Why have death tell a story about life? What does that perspective give us, do you think?
Well, for one, it takes away the usual will they or won't they die suspense. We know everyone dies eventually. Death tells us up front about some of it. So instead, we're forced to focus on the life itself, the value of the moments lived.
Makes sense.
And it's through death's eyes that we meet Liesl Memminger, our protagonist. She arrives on Himmel Street, which means Heaven Street, the irony. She's 9, totally traumatized. She just watched her little brother die on the train.
Oh, that opening is brutal. And it leads straight to that first crucial act, right? At his burial?
Yes. Standing there in the snow, a young gravedigger's apprentice drops a book. The gravedigger's handbook. And Liesl, she just picks it up, stuffs it inside her coat. She can't even read yet.
But it's something physical, a link to him, to her past.
It's her reclaiming something, anything from this overwhelming loss.
Exactly. So that theft, it's not malicious. It's hunger. For knowledge, maybe, for control in a world that's just stripped her bare. And that really sets up the whole book, this young girl finding the power of words, of stories, while literally surrounded by Nazi hatred.
And the place she lands, the Huberman House, becomes her sanctuary, both physically and, well, morally. You have to talk about Hans Huberman first, her foster father.
Hans. Yeah, he's kind of the novel's quiet center, isn't you? The moral compass.
Totally. He's a house painter, plays the accordion, a man whose work is color, whose passion is music. Death keeps mentioning his silver eyes like they see things clearly, unlike the regime.
He's the opposite of Nazi ideology, all warmth and quiet kindness.
And his heroism is in the small things, patiently teaching Liesl to read down in the basement, using paint on the walls. He's giving her the tools, words, to build her own world.
But that kindness, it's dangerous, that moment later on when he gives bread to the Jewish prisoner being marched through town.
Oh, that scene is heart-stopping.
It shows the immense cost of basic human decency in that world. It puts everyone at risk.
And then you have Rosa Huberman, Hans's wife. She's quite different, at least on the surface.
Huh. Yeah, she's rough. Sharp-tongued, always yelling, calling people Somensch or Selkirl. Pig dogs, basically. Yeah.
But Zusak lets us see behind that. It's like armor. The way she copes with the harshness of life, the fear.
And you see her vulnerability, don't you? Like when Hans is sent away to war and she just sits there at night clutching his accordion.
That image. It says everything. The accordion is like Hans's soul, his comfort, and she holds on to it for dear life. Her love for him is fierce, just hidden under all the shouting.
It's a great character arc. And then outside the house, there's Liesl's connection with Rudy Steiner.
Ah, Rudy. Her best friend. The boy with hair, the color of lemons, he's just pure tragic innocence, isn't he?
And loyalty. So loyal to Liesl. But also that streak of youthful rebellion. Remember the Jesse Owens incident?
Oh, wow, yes. Covering himself in charcoal to run like his hero at the Olympics. in Nazi Germany. It's funny, but also incredibly risky. A kid's way of spitting in the face of that whole Aryan supremacy thing.
And poor Rudy, always asking Liesl for that kiss. It's this thread of innocent longing running through everything.
Which makes the later events even more heartbreaking.
Right. And the danger level ratchets up dramatically when Max Mandenberg arrives.
Max, the young Jewish man they hide in the basement. Hans knew his father. He saved Hans' life in World War I. So hiding, Max is paying a debt. But my God, the risk. Day in, day out.
And the bond between Max and Liesl, it's immediate, isn't it? They connect over nightmares, shared trauma, feeling like outsiders, and crucially, over words.
Max understands their power, too.
Yeah.
And what he does, it's just extraordinary. He gets a copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf, the ultimate book of hate.
And what does he do? He
paints over the pages, whites them out. And then on those pages, using that very vessel of hatred, he writes and illustrates stories for Liesl, the standover man, the word shaker.
Turning hate into friendship, turning propaganda into art. It's the core paradox of the book made real.
Absolutely. It's resistance through creation.
So as Liesl's reading takes off, thanks to Hans and the basement walls, her own acts of defiance get maybe a bit bolder, like the book burning.
That's such a key scene. The town square, the bonfire for Hitler's birthday, burning books deemed un-German. Liesl sees the horror, the destruction of ideas. But what does she do?
She salvages one. The shoulder shrug from the smoking ashes.
An act of pure impulse, of rebellion. Mm. And, crucially, it's seen by Ilse Hermann, the mayor's wife.
Ah, Ilse and her library.
Yes. Ilse becomes this complicated figure. Grieving her own son, she silently lets Liesl into her magnificent library. It's a sanctuary. And the source of Liesl's later book thievery, which feels less like stealing and more like rescuing words.
Yeah, it's driven by this desperate need, by grief, by connection. Meanwhile, the war closes in. Hiding Max is constant terror. Air raids become frequent.
And Liesl finds a new role for her words. In the bomb shelter during the raids, she starts reading aloud to everyone huddled there.
Using stories as comfort, as a shield against the fear. Words as medicine.
Beautifully put. But, you know, the tension can't hold forever. That moment with Hans and the bread, giving bread to the marching Jewish prisoner, that changes everything.
It's his conscience laid bare, a moment of pure humanity. But the consequences are swift.
Devastating. Max has to leave immediately. It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
And Hans gets his punishment. He's conscripted, sent away into the army.
That separation, it just shows how war rips apart the very fabric of family, of safety.
And all through this section, Zusak uses that heavy foreshadowing, right? Death keeps telling us what's coming. Especially for Rudy.
Yeah, it's unsettling. He doesn't let you hope in the usual way.
No, it removes that kind of plot suspense. Instead, it makes you focus on the now, on the value of these moments, knowing they're fleeting. You dread the inevitable, but you cherish the life being lived.
And then the inevitable arrives. The climax death has hinted at, an air raid, the siren fail.
There's just silence and then destruction. Himmel Street is obliterated.
And Liesl, she only survives because she was where?
In the basement, writing her own story, the book thief. She comes up to find everything gone. Hans, Rosa, Rudy.
Oh, finding Rudy. And that final moment between them.
Heartbreaking. She finally gives him the kiss he always wanted on his lifeless lips. It's just gut-wrenching.
But death saves her book, doesn't he? Finds her manuscript in the rubble.
He does. Her story survives. And the epilogue gives us a little bit of solace, I suppose. Liesl lives a long life. She's eventually reunited with Max after the war. So loss, yes, overwhelming loss, but endurance too.
So let's bring it back to the core themes. Clearly, number one is the power of words. We've seen it constantly.
Absolutely. Liesl learns their duality. Words as weapons, Hitler's speeches, Mein Kampf, but also words as salvation. The books she reads, the stories Max writes, her own writing.
And she reflects on that herself, right, in her book. Something like,
I have hated the words and I have loved them and I hope I have made them right. It's her claiming agency. Choosing to use words for connection, for truth.
Which ties right into that other huge theme, the duality of human nature, the thing that keeps confusing death.
Yeah, how can people be capable of such horror and yet such breathtaking kindness? Sometimes in the same street, the same house, death says, I am constantly overestimating and underestimating the human race. He just can't pin us down.
The setting itself, Himmel Street, Heaven Street, being the site of such destruction, hammers that home too.
That irony is brutal. And having death narrate, it forces you, as you said, to value life intensely.
Yeah.
Precisely because it's fragile. It's not about big heroic battles always. It's about the courage in small acts.
Teaching a child to read, hiding someone in need, sharing bread, telling stories in a dark basement.
Exactly. Those moments of connection are the real resistance.
Which leads us to Death's very last line about Lysol, decades later, when he finally comes for her soul.
I am haunted by humans.
Wow. What does that mean, do you think? Haunted by our capacity for love, for cruelty, for stories.
Maybe all of it. Yeah. Maybe it means that Lysol's story, her resilience, her love, the way she used words, it left a mark even on Death itself, that the human spirit is just, unforgettable, indomitable almost.
So, ultimately, why does The Book Thief stick with us? Why is it essential reading?
I think it's like a modern fable, isn't it? It shows that even when history tries to crush us, to erase us, the stories we tell, the love we share, they create a kind of immortality.
A powerful thought.
Yeah.
And maybe a reminder for all of us, for you listening, that the words we choose, the stories we value and share, they matter. They really do shape our world. Mandatory closing line. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.